Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by some expert guests as we look ahead to the 3M Open from TPC Twin Cities in Minnesota. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, this week we have Ben Coley, Sporting Life Deputy Head of Content, and Niall Lyons from Odds Checker joining us. Gents, very excited to have you. We are hitting some form on this podcast. So let's talk about how you both got on last week and what you made of the Open at Hoylake. Niall, let's start with you.
In terms of betting-wise, it wasn't great. John Rahm certainly gave me an interest over the weekend anyway. I wasn't too hopeful after a couple of days, but tremendous third round, gave him a chance, and he ended up getting some place money for me. Apart from that, I mentioned a few times last week that I wasn't too keen on Cameron Smith, and I backed him to miss the cut. And of course, he needed the birdie, the 36th. To make the cut, and he stiffed it for an eagle. So, yeah, there was a few blows last week, but a tremendous watch. I think Brian Harman, what can you say? There's just not enough superlatives to how he played last week, and it was hugely impressive. I think, obviously, as an entertainment point of view, it was a bit drab. But I think it all depends on whether you've got money on him or not. And anyone I've seen discussing this on social media over the last couple of days, I think you can almost unanimously say anybody who really loved it and they had money on them, you know, it's totally different whenever your picks are languishing or you land 5 or 6 shots behind. But anybody who backed Harman were in clover, and fair play to them.
Yeah, that's a good point. And on the podcast last week, we had Tom Jacobs. And Ben, I think you've experienced a little bit of this as well. So we've come to it where you pick someone and he settled on top 20 right at the death. He swapped with Russell Henley. He did say, and the quote is, a bit of each way I wouldn't be put off, 125-1. So some people thanking him out there. So well done to Tom Jacobs for that pick, which was phenomenal and gave us a return on the podcast. Ben, you're in some form because we haven't had you since your incredible traffic cone. It was each way in the end, which is still a 30-1 winner. That was so a phenomenal effort. And then you had a similar thing with Tom Kim. I think, did I read you did top Korean, and he nearly went on to win and would have been full each way money.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a good Open for my outright picks, but yeah, Tom Kim was probably the highlight. And to be honest, the way things were going on Friday, when I found out he'd done his ankle in, it kind of felt like a fairly standard thing to happen during what was a frustrating week. I mean, I had Jordan Spieth, who I was at a kid's birthday party on Friday as he sailed into second place. And by the end of the kid's birthday party, he was in about 15th or whatever. My mood was fantastic at around 7 o'clock on Friday night. And just, it's been a bad fortnight. I mean, Trevor Cohn was great, you know, but if one of those wins, it changes the whole year. And I've had a couple of near misses at really big prices on the PGA Tour this year. Eric Cole and Trevor Cohn. And they're ones that you feel a bit like, you know, there's ego here, obviously, you know me. But they're players that you feel like not many people are really talking about. And I think in a few months, people will be talking more about Trevor Cohn because I think he's got a very serious game. So it would have been nice if he could have won. But onwards and upwards. As for the opener, I can only echo what Niall said, really. I mean, Brian Harman was absolutely fantastic, and a nice reminder to all of us that one, that the Open of all the majors is the most open in terms of, you know, any type of game can win. And we saw, you know, a great contrast or a great mix of those in contention of different styles of play. And two, that every year when we come around to these events, you know, sometimes get hung up on all the various trends. And at the end of the day, most of the time, the best guide to how anyone will perform is how they're playing right now. And that guy was in good form coming in. He played well on his Open debut, and I actually think he was quite a popular bet. I know Tom did back him, and I know a lot of other people did as well. You know, three figures about an in-form golfer with some links form. It's easy now, obviously, and he wasn't on my radar, but he was a popular for a guy that a lot of people haven't heard of, you know, in the wider golfing world, if you're a casual golfing viewer, you probably don't know a lot about him. I think he probably had his fair share of backers, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I got to say, I did really enjoy following you on Twitter over the weekend. Of just, it's a bold tactic, getting a bigger lead as you can from Brian Harman along those lines. And the bold tactic certainly worked. And you say you've been hitting the crossbar, and I mean, 150-1 runners up is nothing to be ignored. But excited to see who you've gone for this week. We should probably get into it because Ben did join this call 5 hours early. It's worth noting. So he's been ready and raring to go. So let's get into the 3M Open preview. Yes, that's right. It's the fifth edition of the 3M Open, which is hosted at TPC Twin Cities. Tony Finau won here last year with a score of 17 under, beating Emiliano Grillo, who's obviously one of Ben's mates, and Sungjae Im. And all three are in the field again this week. Let's get straight into it. Niall, what can you tell us about the venue and this course?
Yeah, Twin Cities is an interesting one. It's quite long for par 71, just over 7,400 yards. Length seems to be a significant advantage around here. Three of the last four winners have been Tony Finau, Cameron Champ, and Matthew Wolff. So it definitely indicates that length off the tee is an advantage, but you do need to be accurate around here. There's a lot of water dotted throughout the holes. In terms of course comps, you would definitely look towards PGA National that holds the Honda Classic. Numerous guys have played well there in both courses. Michael Thompson, it's certainly no coincidence that his two wins have come in these courses. Sungjae Im has won the Honda and finished runner-up here. Detroit Golf Club that holds the Rocket Mortgage is another I would look to. It's another course that places a lot of emphasis on strokes gained off the tee, which I think is highly important here this week. Avoiding the water will be the huge issue. Approach play will need to be very good as well. The greens are large and generally quite easy, I would say. So yeah, the emphasis is on the long game. Again, I would look to the other TPC courses such as maybe Sawgrass as well. Any good results there will be a positive too. So yeah, as I say, long game is going to be hugely important here.
Yeah, we're obviously coming on the back of the Open, as we mentioned, Ben, and Griot's come up there that he's gone well here before. He had a top 10 at the Open, as did Cam Young, Jason Day and Sepp Straka, who all lining up this week. Do you put much emphasis on that, the travel side of it when you're doing your previews? And have you seen over the years that it has massively impacted and it's hard to get the win? Or how do you approach it?
It's really difficult. One of the many things where you have to, you know, there's a lot of sort of feel involved and different things work for different people. I would say coming this way around the world is less of a problem typically than going the other way. So hopefully, you know, you will see a lot of players cope just fine with the travel. But there's a mixed bag. I mean, when it used to be the Canadian Open on the back of this event, obviously we got a couple of high-class winners who managed to cope with it. Jason Day was one example. When we had the WGC, so after Port Rush, they went over and played at Southwind the week after. Brooks Koepka won, Rory was in contention. So, I mean, the best players in the world, they're used to the travel. They don't travel like we do. It's a fair deal more comfortable and less stressful. And, you know, they've got plenty of time to relax and get over things by the time Thursday starts. So it wouldn't be a big issue for me. The more of a factor is treating last week's form with caution, because it's such a different test, right? And Sungjae would be a good example. That he came here last year. He played really poorly in Scotland 2 weeks running, but he came back to something a lot more familiar and, dare I say, at this stage in his career, more suitable, and he was fine. Finau came in and won this off a really good final round in the Open, but he'd never been a factor. And you will see a lot of that. You'll see guys who are just frankly happy to get back to something much more comfortable, much more familiar, much less interesting in terms of the shot variety, but therefore maybe a bit more predictable in terms of what happens to good shots. So, I wouldn't read a lot into the Open, but obviously if someone comes with a bit of a momentum, that's never a bad thing.
Yeah, right. Before we get into, speaking of momentum, before we get into the top of the market and your picks, I'm going to give you each a player just to hear a bit more about. The first one for you, Niall, is Justin Thomas. Can you tell us a bit more what's going on? Because everyone is waxing lyrical and does sort of the numbers back up just how much of a struggle he's going through? Because we've seen him, he nearly did well week before. He's 25-1 at the moment. Shaw's has 18 in places. Has that surprised you? Where are you at with JT?
Strange. I've actually backed him a couple of times over the last 68 weeks. I think Ben has as well. I didn't quite think he was in as bad as form as what maybe his results were suggesting. His iron play over the last couple of months hasn't been too bad. It has dipped in the last 3 or 4 weeks, to be fair. So obviously, there's been a big conversation around his debt and what he's done, whether that has changed his game or not. I remain unconvinced that, you know, that's the issue. I think plenty of players in his position have struggled and have had real down periods in their career. Two Europeans come to mind, Westwood and Stenson being two. You've got the likes of Fowler and Jordan Spieth. So I don't think we can place too much, you know, I don't think there's too much of a need to get worried about Thomas. I think he's got to sort it out in the end. All these golfers who have reached the top of the game usually do. But there obviously is problems at the minute. And the 25-1 on offer this week, I don't think will interest many. What a surprise it would be if he went and won this week. He's obviously, we'll get talking about it later on, obviously, with the Ryder Cup. He's got work to do, and that's obviously why he turns up here this week. But it would be surprising, certainly, if he goes and wins. But I don't think it'll take him too long to turn it around.
It needs to not take too long as well, because the big thing with Thomas is he is, what, 5 spots outside the top 70 in the FedEx Cup. And this is the first year where only the top 70 make the first playoff event. So he's got 2 tournaments. And if he doesn't bag something like a top 15 finish, he won't play in the playoffs. And then you're at a position where, well, what exactly does he do? Because is he going to just, you know, wait for the Ryder Cup to come around and hope he gets picked? Surely he'd have to consider coming across to Europe. Is Justin Thomas about to turn up in the Czech Masters? I mean, that's a realistic possibility if he doesn't do something over the next fortnight. Certainly you'd think Wentworth would have to be on the radar for him if it isn't already. So it's going to be really interesting because he is in that situation where I think Zach Johnson wants to pick him. But to not be in the playoffs, that is a big ask. I personally, the other thing I'd say, I know golfers say a lot of stuff. They don't always get it right. They're not always the best sort of self-assessors. But he came off the course on Friday when he shot 71. And he said, I'm absolutely fine. I'm hitting loads of good shots. I'm hitting some shots that make me feel like the world number one. I'm just making a few silly mistakes and I'll be fine. And after he had that humiliating US Open, he was 9th in the Travelers, which is way stronger than this. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was in the mix this week. I did consider him. And one way or another, I hope his class shines over the next 2 weeks and he gets that top 20 he needs.
Yeah, Graham, really glad to hear Ben Coley hasn't left the Justin Thomas hype train.
Never.
As Niall said, I know you've been on a few weeks and water is also wet. One other name I want to throw at you, Ben, because I somewhat outed you on Twitter with it, is Cameron Champ, who obviously is a former winner here. You, as we saw, picked the eventual winner, Vincent Norman, then quickly backfired on it for Cam Champ because the odds went down, and then because of Troy Merritt's withdrawal, sorry to make you live through this again, and then obviously Cam Champ also withdraws. Is he a name you're looking at this week?
Yeah, look, he has to be to a degree. What I would say is I put him up at 40-1 for the Barbasol. He's what, 66-1 for this? So, you know, he played well in the Barracuda. I don't think the Barracuda is a great event for him. He's definitely got the potential. You know, we know all about what Cameron Champ does. He did lead the field in putting when he won this tournament. You know, can you bank on him doing that again? No. But he doesn't usually need to do that to have a good chance. He just needs to drive it as he can. So, yeah, he's definitely got to be on the radar. This is a very Cameron Champ event. He wins. He's won 3 sort of mid-tier PGA Tour events, including this one. So, yeah, no surprise. I think a lot of people will be on him this week. I think it's a far better fit than last week. And yeah, I wouldn't put you off. He just wasn't quite for me. I gather, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. I gather the man doesn't much like practicing. Let's put it that way. So maybe he'll always be one of those guys who never quite reaches where we expected him to reach. I gather his time around the putting and chipping area is limited, shall we say.
Well, this could be his week then, because the last two winners have ranked pretty low on the putting, despite the low scoring. So if there's a time for champ to be champ, this could well be it. Quick look at the top of the market. Tony Finau leads it at 12-1. We've got Cameron Young, 14-1, who's found some form again. Matsuyama's at 18-1. Thomas has said around 20s. Sung Jae Im 22s, say Tagala 33s and Griot 33s. And then, of course, the European influence finishing off the top 10, which is Arberg, Straka and Steven Jaeger. So that's obviously the Swede, Austrian and German at 35-1 each is the top of the market. Let's have a listen to find out who you guys are going with. We're going three this week as it's just one event, and we'll even chuck in a couple of long shot bonuses as well to complete the five that you would be putting in previews overall. Niall, can you kick us off here with who's headlining for you?
Yeah, I'm going with Cameron Davis as my top bet. As I mentioned, obviously, Finau, Champ and Wolf, three of the last four guys to win this. So I was quite keen to have a couple of ball busters on my side, and Cam Davis is one of them. The putter's obviously been an issue this year. He struggled with it for most of the season, especially lately, but there have been decent signs of late. He's finished 16th, 28th and 12th. In three appearances here. And obviously, I've mentioned before the link with the PGA National and Detroit. He's got two top 20s and a victory there at Detroit Golf Club and a top 10 at the Honda a couple of years ago, which he really should have went better. And he had a big chance down the back nine there. I know Ben's quite keen on him this week as well. And he wrote in his preview, which I didn't, obviously that he's just outside the top 50 in the world, so he's got plenty to play for over the next coming weeks. Obviously places in major championships, but 77th in the FedEx as well, obviously needing to get into the top 70 to start the playoffs at the St. Jude in a couple of weeks. So yeah, he's got plenty to play for, and I think he's maybe one who could benefit from possibly not playing last week. He obviously sat at the range for most of the week at Hoylake before Thursday, looking to get his place in the field, and it just didn't quite pan out. But there was obviously talk going into the Open of whether if you played in Scotland in the bad conditions, whether it would affect your game and kind of knock you off kilter for the Open Championship. And conditions kind of played out quite similar from Scotland to Hoylake last week. There was tough conditions in both events. So I'm thinking maybe Cam Davis maybe benefits a little from not playing in that, and he can go to a course that really suits his long game. There's wide landing areas here for his ball off the tee, how far he hits it. And his irons are in decent nick lately too. So, yeah, if he can hold a few putts, I'm quite hopeful around the 40-1 mark.
Yeah, me too, very much so. As Niall said, I think he's got a lot to play for. And I know that's the case for a lot of players this week, and it's hard to, you know, work out exactly where motivations lie. I think for the best players, the motivation is demonstrated by the fact they're here. But yeah, I think he'll go really well. My main bet, Ollie, is going to be Sung Jae Im. I'm going win only. He just sort of tend to, you know, below 20-1, generally speaking, I'll tend towards going win only, and hopefully he can do the business. He's won at PGA National, like Niall. It's hard to escape the correlation. This is just a bit of an easier version, really. Very similar skills required. He played well in the Open, and while I've said that I don't think the Open form really matters that much, for him it was important to get back on the bike. He'd had a bit of a rough run, certainly poor in his final start before the Open. So that was nice to see. His short game looked sharp. And, you know, for a guy who's got form figures of 15-2 here, all eight rounds under par, I thought he was pretty much the man to be, because Finau's still a little bit below his best, and I think Sung Jae would have been second favourite here if Cam Young didn't contend for the Open. I don't necessarily know whether that tells us that really Cam Young's in a better place with his game than Sung Jae is with his. And we know that Im has got two wins. Cam Young's still searching for his first, and I'd certainly give the edge to the Korean. So, yeah, I think he's a man to beat.
Beautiful. Great opening outrights there. So we've got, 3 points win at 20-1 at that sort of area for Sung Jae, and 1.5 points Cam Davis at 40-1. Ben, let's stick with you then a bit further afield potentially for the second picks.
Yeah, Justin Suh is a player I really like. You know, I wouldn't be alone in that. He was a top class amateur. He actually played in this event in 2019 when his sort of college rivals all played in it as well. If you remember, Morikawa was third, wasn't he? Matt Wolf won it. Suh was very much part of that pack of four along with Hovland, who turned pro at the same time. And obviously, his career didn't take off in the same way, but he won the Korn Ferry Tour Championship late last year on, I think, actually quite a similar golf course to this one in Victoria National. And his PGA Tour career, I mean, he's missed one cut in the calendar year. I think that says a lot about the quality of the player. You know, not always has he been in the mix, but he was in contention at the Honda Classic. That's his single best piece of form this year, along with, I think, the Players' Championship. He was thereabouts as well. He's not been quite as good recently, but I think last week, mid-pack at the Barracuda, where he'll have watched another young stud from California win that tournament, was perfectly decent. I didn't have it down as a great course for him. And he's a really strong driver when he's on. He's accurate, he's long enough, very similar to him, actually, in terms of what he does off the tee. So, yeah, I think there's every chance that this is a good fit for him. He's played it before, which is not always the case with all these tournaments he's been playing. For the first time, he got all four rounds in 4 years ago, and he's a lot better player now. So, yeah, Justin Suh, I think he's about 66 to 1. I got a point each way on him. I think he could be in for a really big week.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, Suh, as well. He's putting so well lately as well. He's one of the best putters in the PGA Tour this season. And even though we go on about the long game here, it's a bit of a slightly strange event that it really does suit the long hitters, and we've seen that with the winners, but I think Thompson and Champ, really surprisingly, Champ made a score on the greens that week when he won. He finished first in the greens, which is, you know, certainly strange for Cameron Champ. And then Michael Thompson made his gains on and around the greens as well. So whether we need another 4 or 5 years of evidence of how this course plays is another thing. But I do stick with the longer hitters. But nevertheless, I think that's a good feller and Suh's cap that he's putting so well lately. I'm going to go for another ball buster, though, in Taylor Pendrith. He missed a cut last week, but I don't place too much emphasis on that event simply because of the venue and the score, and it's not one that I would normally look to. But, you know, previous to that, his form had turned around at the Travelers. He had a bad first round there, but he followed up with a 66, just narrowly missed the cut. And then he sat third after 54 holes of the Rocket Mortgage, shooting 67, 64, 67. Only a poor round there on the final day. Then again, sixth at the Barbasol, another four rounds in the 60s. That means only two of his last 11 rounds have been worse than 69. So I do think he's hitting form once again. And crucially, he's found form with the irons, which was missing for a long part of the year to begin with, but he's playing well on approach play now. And yeah, I think there was 60, between 60 and 70 to 1 there, and this is a course that really will suit him. And yeah, if he can just manage to keep that form with the irons and over, obviously we don't have the stats from last week, but I'm quite confident that, you know, only shooting 69 or better in 9 of his last 11 rounds is a good sign that he's back to form. And he's a guy who I've been long a fan of the last couple of years. And I don't think he's too far away from winning the PGA Tour event.
Yeah, great. The Canadian, you're right. 66 to 1, he's available. And still 80s for 6 places for Justin Suh. And I love Niall. I don't know if it's deliberate. You've already written Ben's headline of he's so good at putting, was how you opened with that. So, I mean, he writes himself as soon as he goes to victory. So that was a point each way on Mr. Pendrith at 66s. And then Ben had a point each way as well on Justin. Let's get into your, before we have a look at long shots, we've got a third, a bonus one this week. Ben, who's that?
I really like Grayson Sig here. He's a big enough price as well. The reason he's drifted down the betting, if you go back to last week, and this is Niall will know, this is an imperfect game to play, but sometimes I do think it gives you a good indication of overreactions in markets. This time last week, Joel Damon's 150 to 1. Grayson Sig is 50 to 1. And I had them both on my shortlist, and I went with Joel Damon. Painfully. Wish I'd gone with Grayson Sig. I wouldn't have been up all night on Sunday, but there we are. Grayson Sig missed the cut. Joel Damon obviously was in contention. And then when betting opens on this event, they're pretty much the same price. And that's one tournament, right? It's one tournament. It's a tournament that Grayson Sig you know, hadn't played particularly well in, or as well as Damon in the past. And also, he had a bad first round. As Niles referenced already, Stableford scoring, it's a bit of a strange system, but he had two double bogeys in the first round. They're killer. They cost you, that cost him 6 points, right? So it's really difficult to come back from that. Round two, he shot 64 on the sort of standards scorecard, 7 birdies, 11 pars. He missed the cut by 1 point. He just had a bad day at altitude on a firm golf course on Thursday. Doesn't tell me anything about the state of his game. Now, coming into that tournament, the state of his game was clearly very good. Since the Canadian Open, through the Travelers, I think the Rocket Mortgage and the John Deere, he played consistently well. His irons were ticking over, gaining, you know, up to a stroke around with those, which is sort of his bread and butter. He started to putt a little bit better. Really, if you look at every aspect of the game, he'd started to do it well. He's always been a player of sort of amateur pedigree and big potential. Won a couple of times on a Korn Ferry Tour. If you go back to last year, his rookie season, his single best performance of the year came here at the 3M Open. So in terms of all those things, if he hadn't have played last week, I think it'd be a 66 to 80 to one shot. And I'd have been quite interested in him. But he did play last week. He had a bad day on Thursday and we get 100 to 1. And a little bit bigger yesterday in places. So I really like him. I do. I think it's a really good course for him. He's a rock solid ball striker. And yeah, what more is there to say? I just think sometimes the market overreacts to a bad day at the office. And in his case, I don't think it should have.
Yeah, on the flip side is Justin Suh as well. He's one who's struggling with a putter. But as I mentioned earlier on, the greens here are some of the easiest on tour. So he'll probably benefit from that as well. My next bet would be Adam Svensson. His strength was always ball striking, but it's dipped recently. His iron play has really struggled in the last 2 to 3 months, but there's definitely signs of improvement. 4 weeks on the trot now, his approach play has improved each week. It's borne out in results too. He made the cut in the US Open. These aren't great results, but 40th in the Rocket Mortgage and then 21st at the John Deere. He's making cuts again, and I think that's important. There has been some good amongst the bad during the season. He led the players at halfway at Sawgrass. He was 4th at Quail Hollow at halfway, 10th at the PGA at halfway. Now, he hasn't had great weekends there, but nevertheless, it does show you what he's capable of. And he finished 13th at Sawgrass there too earlier on in the year, which is another positive for this course. Last time out in the John Deere Classic, 4 rounds in the 60s is a big positive. Again, as I say, the irons are improving each time, and the short game and driving is absolutely spot on at the minute. Has one top 20 here and a top 10 at the Honda as well. So, yep, I think he's a very decent bet this week. 80 to 1's out there is available. And yeah, he's one I'm quite excited about.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, the S's, Team S's of Svensson and Sig, and we've got Sutt as well. They are, yeah, they're both 80 to 1. The preview effect has taken into account and knocked a bit off, but both 80 to 1 there and both a point each way. Now, I'm going to come back to you, Ben, and this one for both of you. We're just going to, and give them both at the same time, just your potentially longer shot, the other two sort of names that have featured in the previews that we should be keeping an eye out for. And as I mentioned, yeah, just double up and tell them why as well.
Well, I will just be claiming a share of Niles' podcast success if Davis wins. Just be absolutely clear on that. the other two I'll give you are Austin Ekro and Garrick Higo. Ekro played here 2 years ago. I think it was his 4th professional start. He opened with a 73. He'd been struggling at the time in sort of other low-grade events. And he roared back into it and finished just outside the top 10. So that was a really nice first look at the course. He comes back now as a full card holder. He was 2nd, actually, to Justin Suh in that Korn Ferry Tour Championship, which got him his card. I do think that course is quite a good guide. And he comes back as one of the, you know, most solid drivers in the field. I think he's 30th in strokes gained off the tee, top 20 in total driving. And that's probably, if there is a theme throughout my selections, it's guys who I think can give themselves a platform. So I think ultimately this is a really easy course, from the right positions and a really difficult course from the wrong positions off the tee. And hopefully that will be borne out in results. So I really like Ekro. He's been playing well. He's sort of one of those who's gone off the boil on the face of it the last couple of starts, but we're not far away from when he finished 10th in the US Open. So I don't think his game is far away either. And as for Garrett Kiggo, he's as straightforward as they come, really, in terms of he's improved his last three starts. He is an awesome driver of the ball. I think actually, if you had to ask me to back someone to be the best driver in the field this week, I'd probably go with Garrett Kiggo. His iron play can be slightly iffy, but there are some signs of improvement there. We know he's a winner. Saw that in Spain a couple of years ago. And then when he came over to the PGA Tour and won the Palmetto Championship as well. And I think a lot of people would be put off by the fact that he missed the cut here last year. But he was in absolutely dire form. He'd have missed the cut wherever he played that week. And I looked to the Honda Classic as well. For him, because he shot back-to-back 66s around PGA National back in February this year. Now, anyone who does that can clearly play around that course, one of the hardest in the schedule, and I think he'll be able to play around this course as well. So, yeah, Garrett Kiggo, top talent, one of the best drivers in the field, and probably more suited to this course than you might think.
Yeah, well, you got an extra pick, Ben, so I do want the glory if Cam Davis comes in all the same.
All right, fine, fine.
But yeah, my final bet, one of the outsiders, triple figures, is Ben Griffin. I think he's playing a lot better, or a lot better golf lately than his results are showing. He's got numerous missed cuts in the last couple of months, but his iron play has been absolutely phenomenal. Last 2 weeks, two decent weeks on the links, he finished 25th in Scotland. He ranked 23rd in strokes gained approach there that week. And then just missed the cut on the number at the Open Championship, shot 4 over, which I don't think so. I think that's a decent performance from Ben Griffin. Just one more putt dropping over the course of the first 2 days. We would have meant he made the weekend there, and it would have been two really successful weeks across links that he's not really used to. Previous to that, 33rd in the Rocket Mortgage. He was 34th in strokes gained approach that week. Previous to that, he was 32nd. Strokes gained approach at Colonial when he made the cut. There's really no reason to suggest why he shouldn't be having better finishes than this, because his iron play is literally so solid. Even during his missed cuts, they're not. That's certainly not the reason why he's missing cuts. And the driver or putter, there's no severe problems in his game. They're just not quite hitting the heights that he. But I've no explanation as to why he's not scoring better, but I definitely think better results are on the horizon here. And obviously, some of them figures, strokes gained approach, are on a lot more stronger fields than what we see this week. So yeah, I'm quite keen on Griffin scoring well. If he can, his form of the irons is absolutely tremendous. Putted well last week at the Open as well. Just his work around the greens was the main reason why he missed the cut. But good sign that he putted much better as well. So yeah, I'm quite hopeful that he'll continue this. I think just those two results on the links are slightly underestimated by the bookmakers.
Great stuff. There you go. Griffin rounds off our fabulous nine. He's 110-1, so yeah, triple figures moment. Then Austin Ekro 66s and Higo 70s at the moment. I'll recap them all at the end, but it is nice to hear Garrett Kiggo, because he, of course, featured a few weeks ago in a game of Who Am I, and that's exactly what we're about to play. Yes, everyone's favourite. I say it every week, but it is everyone's favourite game. Who am I? How it works is I pick a player who I think is a good chance and they miss the cut. And these guys work out exactly who that person is from some obscure facts. And I've got pretty obscure this week. So thank you to all those weird sources out there who helped me with this. Let's get into it. They're in the field this week. And the first clue is they will not eat anything that comes out of the sea. Now, is that a helping for hands in his head for Ben Coley? Who knows if they've been looking at their profiles? Have we got a guess here from either of you?
I mean, you've got a 1 in 156.
is this a play on his name, or is it actually the truth?
That's the truth. It's the truth.
It comes out of the sea. Well, quite obviously, that is... I don't know. Who am I going to guess? Throw a name out there, Niall.
I'll go for someone who knows a keen fisherman, just for that reason alone, Ryan Fox.
It's not Ryan Fox.
I'm going to go for Hideki Matsuyama.
No, God, that would really ruin it. But I like the sushi train as well, but no, that would really ruin it if you got it, wouldn't it? Okay, we're still sticking pretty niche, but there's a clue. I use a 1984 half dollar coin as my ball marker. It was a gift from my mother.
Eric Cole?
It's not Eric Cole.
I like that shout. No, I did like that shout though. Mark Hubbard.
It's not Mark Hubbard. Love that shout. Martin, and I know Mark Hubbard will be loving that he's getting shout out on this pod. So there you go, Mark.
Do you know, just to be clear, have you checked that Mark Hubbard does eat fish? Because, you know, there could be two of these people.
Yeah. I have, yes, I have checked just now. Okay, this one, it gets a bit easier now. I was named All-State in my high school basketball team, winning two state titles.
Gary Woodland.
Gary Woodland, ding, ding, ding. Well done, Ben Coley. And that's the first win. This is going to rank up there with some of your best wins, isn't it, in the golf betting world?
It's not John Wonko in episode one of this podcast, I believe. That's going to take some beating, but yeah, I'll take it. It's my first winner in 2.5 weeks, so yeah, I'll take it.
How good. Yeah, the last two were he's earned over $33 million on the PGA Tour, and he's a four-time winner, including a major. But yeah, doesn't eat anything out of the sea, fish or seafood. So there you go. Just throwing your previews going forwards. How good. Well, there is the game of Who Am I? And now we are going to have a look, a special look, because there's no DP World Tour events, at some Ryder Cup picks, wildcard picks, and teams. Yeah, the Ryder Cup is approaching very fast, and we're going to have a little look deeper into it now. We actually asked you both to throw out to your hordes of followers to throw in some questions, and I've picked my favourite from each. Niall, I'm going to start with you, which comes in from Warren Allsworth, and he says, is Thomas Dietrich the name that's being overlooked as a possible wild card? He's been very solid on the PGA Tour this season. What do you make of that, Niall?
He wouldn't be one that's being overlooked for me, I have to say, personally. I think he holds little chance of getting there. I know he had a decent finish last week in the Open, finishing 13th, but he's had solid results. But I don't know how many, any of you off the top of your head, remember any golfers on either side who were in the team who hadn't won an event yet?
Jeff Overton is the obvious one, isn't he? But beyond that, I can't think of another. So Jeff Overton at Celtic Manor had never won and never did win.
Interesting. I find it very hard that Dietrich's included, not just for that reason, but I think there's five or six ahead of him. Definitely four, anyway. I think we talked beforehand, I think there's almost eight locks for the European team, and there's four more. For me, it's four from six. And Dietrich wouldn't be one of them. I'd be very surprised if unless he does something, obviously, in the next 4 weeks. But it looks highly unlikely.
The thing with Dietrich is, and I'd be the same. I mean, he has to do something, right? Unless something changes, he's definitely not getting in that team. He is in the top 50 just in the FedEx Cup. So at the bare minimum, he's got this. He's got the Wyndham. He's got the FedEx St. Jude Classic. And then probably, if he plays okay, the top 50 get into the BMW Championship. So he's got four tournaments in a row at a very high level. And if he were to go and win one of those, then everything changes. But I do think he probably has to go and win one of those.
Yeah. Okay. So wild card looking less likely for Dietrich unless there's a win on the horizon. Ben, a couple of people asking about a few more wild cards for you, actually. So Skyhook DFS, who's always very good on Twitter and golf, and Oliver, great name, Inwoods. They both asked the same question, bizarrely, which is, what do you make of Ludvig Åberg, we have mentioned before, and Adrien Dumont de Chassard, I hope is my A-level French working there, as potential captain's pick. Do you have one ahead of the other? Are they any chance, either of them?
I think Åberg has got a serious chance. If you'd like to know exactly what's going to happen over the next 4 weeks, Ollie, I'll tell you. He's going to not win this week. He's going to not win next week. He's therefore going to miss the FedEx Cup playoffs. He's going to fly over to Europe. He's going to play in the Czech Masters. He's going to be 12-1. I'm going to tip him 5 points each way, and he's going to win by six. Okay? after that all happens, he is going to be on the Ryder Cup side, okay? So sorry to ruin all this jeopardy and discussion, but that is what's going to happen. As regards the Belgian, Adrien de Mon du Chassard, who is an Illinois graduate, is it Northwestern? Is that right? Yeah, it is. He's a fabulous player. He turned professional one straight away on the Corn Ferry Tour, and he's been in the top 10 every other week. That's great. He may well be good enough, but you can't get on a Ryder Cup side playing at that level. And people can question the system. They can say, well, he should be fast-tracked to the PGA Tour. Fine, but he isn't going to be. And therefore, he has no opportunity. Again, unless he decides to come over to Europe, he has no opportunity to perform, which he won't do, by the way, because he wants to get his card through. Anyway, he has no opportunity to prove himself at the highest level, which Arberg does have and arguably has already done, actually. So it's unfortunate, but I'll put it this way. The Challenge Tour isn't as strong as the Korn Ferry Tour, but Matteo Manassero has won twice in the last month. No one seriously thinks he should be on the Ryder Cup side, and he's Italian. So, no, it's not going to happen. But he'll be on it in 2 years, though.
Yeah, I think one of the important things is, like, Åberg, obviously, a few weeks ago in Detroit, played with Luke Donald and shot 65. So that's hugely impressive. And I think from what I hear, Donald is hugely impressed by him. And, but for me, I'd actually be surprised if he makes it. Obviously, as I say, it's between four others. I think it's between Straka. Obviously, you've got the eight locks. You've got Straka, McIntyre, Parr, Maronk, the two Højgaards, and Åberg. And I'd be surprised if Åberg makes the grade, unless, as you say, Ben, he does something on the PGA Tour in the next couple of weeks, or he lands back in Europe and wins. I think you've got, in McIntyre and Maronk, you've obviously got two course winners, and who have both played extremely well this season, who I think are almost... I think there'll be a huge talking point if either of those are left out, considering what they've achieved in the last 12 months. You know, Adrian Maronk's won two or three National Open Championships, which takes huge guts to, you know, to hold those putts. And those, they're big events, the Australian, the Irish, and the Italian. You look at Straka, what he's done recently. He's obviously a PGA Tour winner as well. Played obviously in tough conditions as well at the Honda, and then obviously played it excellent last week. I'd be surprised if he's left out as well. So for me, it's one spot. I think those three, Straka, McIntyre, and Maronk, will make it. And it's up between the Højgaards, Åberg, and Seamus Power for the other. And my pick would be Seamus Power. I think he's going to be the one who gets it. And he sits 28th in the FedEx rankings at the minute, and I think just that gives him a huge chance over the next 4 or 5 weeks. I don't know exactly the points what he'll need, but I assume he'll definitely get into the BMW, the second to last, and it's just a matter of whether he makes the final 30 in the Tour Championship. And if he does, which I would imagine, you know, can't be much bigger than, you know, a 6-4, 13-8 shot at the minute, if he's inside the top 30 right now. But if he makes the Tour Championship, I can't see Åberg getting in front of him, unless, as you say, Ben, he comes over here and wins.
Niall, you must be psychic. I love this, because you've just jumped straight ahead and it's working well. So what we're going to do for the next few weeks, as we have just one event, is look at you guys, the experts, different ones we've got coming in, filling in the team. So, as you mentioned, there are sort of, we're calling it eight locks on Team Europe. So we're going to go with McIlroy, Rahm, Fleetwood, Hovland, Lowry, Hatton, Fitzpatrick and Rose. We're putting them aside. They're done. And from the American side, it's a bit tougher, but we're going to say, just as I'm scrolling through my notes, we've got Scheffler, Clark, Harmon, Koepka, Schauffele, Cantlay. They're currently in the top six spots. I'm going to throw in Ricky Fowler there and Jordan Spieth. So it leaves a couple of bigger name omissions. They're eight. Now, straight away, you've gone on like it. And you're throwing, we're going to, each tipster expert is going to put one person for each team. So you've gone with Seamus Power there as your man. And there is a market up for it. It's 4-11 he is at the moment. So let's keep on that European train of thought. Out of the names that have been mentioned so far, or maybe haven't been. Ben, who are you filling in this side with, please?
Well, first of all, it's good to have disagreement on. I think Powell won't make the side, so you can pit Niall and I against each other there. I think he's unlikely to make it personally. You just want one name, don't you? You want me to throw in one name here?
But throw in one name, but mention 105 if you like.
Yeah. So I controversially still think I would have to be sending my sincere and humblest apologies to Sepp Straka, who by many measures deserves to be on this team, right? You went on the PGA Tour twice in 18 months. You have two top 10s in majors. These are things that a lot of European players, although they've not had the opportunity, have not achieved. And yet, I don't know if it's because I can't get my head around the idea that one of the European team members would sound like one of the American team members. Can you imagine an American team member with a strong British accent? Like, you just wouldn't contemplate it, would you? You just wouldn't. And I know as well, this is something I have to get used to, because in years to come, it could well be the entire European team has been through the US college system and they all sound like Sepp Straka. However, I'm clinging on grimly to this idea of us against them, and I'm leaving out Sepp. I'm sorry, you said you didn't know whether you were more American or more Austrian once. You're out. And it also, by the way, I'm not having a go at the bloke. He's brilliant. He hasn't come over to play the Italian Open. He's had three chances to do that, and he's not. And I think that should be held against him, right? I think when you're not one of the top players, you should go and do that if you're serious about wanting to be picked, right? Three players have done. I mean, obviously, that's where they would be playing anyway. But Højgaard, Mronk, and McIntyre have won at that golf course. That's massive, in my opinion. So I am going to throw in Nicolai Højgaard as my selection. I personally want to see those long, aggressive young players complete our team. Bob, Nicolai, Arberg, and Mronk. And I think there's a good chance Bob qualifies. He's going to rest up in the next few weeks and come back with a bang, hopefully. But Nicolai Højgaard's one for me. Now, obviously, we have a bit of a conundrum as to what he's going to be doing, because he's not going to be in the FedEx Cup playoffs unless something changes. So he'll be coming back to Europe. He'd be a massive chance as well in the Czech Masters, at least to finish second behind Arberg. And he actually, I think he shot like 62 at Kron last year as well. Anyway, Nicolai Højgaard, he gets in my team.
Do you not think it'll be a difficult phone call for Luke Donald if he rings up one brother and not the other?
It'll be especially difficult if he does it on FaceTime, because he won't. Can you prove that this is you?
But I actually think if he brought the two brothers, which I have a funny feeling neither of the two will be there. But if he brought the two of them, I think it would add like a real. I think it would give everybody something that it's just a straight. Obviously, the Molinari brothers did it before. I think it adds something to the competition. I think it adds something to the team room probably as well. Having two brothers there, and even though I agree with you that Nicolai is obviously the more obvious pick of the two, but I do think it'll be tough to bring one and almost not the other, even though I can't see Rasmus in the squad at all.
Yeah, that's very fair. I mean, obviously, Eduardo being a vice captain, he knows firsthand what it was like to play with his brother, not his twin brother, but his brother at Celtic Manor. The other thing we have to acknowledge, Ollie, is that things are going to change a lot. It's very unlikely that we could sit here and map out. We might land on the right players, but in terms of how they get there, that a lot is up in the air. Straka's a great example. I personally, right now, wouldn't pick him. If he goes and reaches the Tour Championship and wins again, he'll be in the side. He'd probably be in the side anyway. But the other thing to remember with Eduardo Molinari is that he got in the team by winning the final event before they picked the wild cards, right? It forced Conor Montgomery into a very late change of heart, like hours after he'd won at Glen Eagles. I think we have to be open to that happening again as well. And it's actually Luke Donald himself, the same year. Isn't that the year he went and played in Wales and he came back from the PGA Tour to sort of prove himself? So I think that both of them would be very open-minded at this point. And actually, the more we talk about it, the one thing this is a betting podcast effectively, right? The more we talk about it, honestly, my confidence that Europe can win this Ryder Cup is increasing by the week. Absolutely. I think 2-1 Europe to win the Ryder Cup is a fantastic bet. I really do think America have got their hands full here. And without being accused of further disrespecting our wonderful Open champion, there is no question, I don't care how tough he is, how brilliant he was on that golf course on that day, on that week, there is no question, if you're a European player, you would rather play Brian Harman than Justin Thomas. I don't care who you are. That is a fact, right? You'd rather play Brian Harman. And Brian Harman is going to take up a place from, it might be Justin Thomas, it might be Colin Morikawa, right? Wyndham Clark, brilliant. He's done fantastically. He is going to remain a high-class player. Again, I'd rather play him than Dustin Johnson even, who doesn't look like he's got a look in. So things are lining up for Europe. I'm very excited, clearly, about how the next 6 weeks are going to unfold. But once the Ryder Cup comes, I think 2-1 will look great.
I love that. 2-1. They're 2-1, as is your Nicolai tip for the market. And you're ignoring, if you can get a lay at 1-10, is 10-1 on Straka. I also really enjoyed, Ollie, loads of stuff's going to change. We cannot predict the future. Said 4 minutes after calling the Masters winner in a few weeks. But no, love that. Okay, so we've got a 2-1 pick in there. So they're the two from the European side. And as you've mentioned, there's a few people in America who are a bit nervous right now. Niall, who are you going to put forward as your wild card to represent, let's call it the opposition, say it how it is?
Yeah, well, you mentioned almost eight locks for USA earlier on. I would add Max Homa to that list. I think it's about nine. But they would be the nine locks for me. But for the purpose of the pod and choosing one of the wild cards, who I think will be a wild card, I think it has to be Tony Finau. I don't see a reason how you can leave Tony Finau. The strength and depth in this US squad is absolutely incredible. And who knows what happens over the next few weeks, whether Justin Thomas misses out or not, depending on what he does. But I don't think there's anything that Tony Finau can do over the next few weeks that stops him being on the side. At whose expense, I don't know. Whether it's Thomas, I think Colin Morikawa was possibly vulnerable. Which is incredible to think about. And then you've got the likes of Paddy Reid, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Sam Burns, Taylor Gooch, who don't look, for all the tea in China getting in there, but bloody hell, what an array of talent not to have in your Ryder Cup team. So the strength and depth in this US squad is incredible, but as Ben said, there's a couple of negatives going against him. I think Harman's length off the tee could be an issue around Marco Simone. Definitely, he'd be one for foursomes for sure, maybe not for four balls. But yeah, I just don't see how Tony Finau's left out, so he's my one wild card.
Yeah, he's 10-11, Tony Finau. So pretty good value there. Justin Thomas, I did see in the note, has been left out of Niall's 12. Ben, firstly, forgive Niall. Don't hurt him. How do you feel about that? And on the back of that, who are you going to throw into the mix for Team USA?
I think, you've already said Ricky Fowler, right? I think Fowler will be on that team. And that's, I'm really pleased for him. I know that sounds silly. I don't know him. Although we do share a birthday, that can go in your... When you do a Who Am I, clue like number three could be same birthday as well-known golf tips to Ben Coley. And that could be like number three. Obviously not when I'm on. So you've said Ricky Fowler. I would be putting him forward as a very, very strong chance. I mean, like when Keegan Bradley won the Travelers, his second win this season versus no wins for Schauffele and Cantlay and Morikawa, I thought, you know, he's probably played his way in there. But as the weeks go on, you're like, no, he needs more. He needs more than this to get in this side. I wholeheartedly agree with Niall. I think the idea that Finau's in danger seems a little far-fetched. I think sort of talk of his demise has been greatly overplayed. I think he'll produce the goods over the next few weeks at some stage, certainly in the playoffs. And obviously he's got that backup of loads of FedEx Cup points in the bank already. So the one I'll give you is Morikawa. I don't think you leave Colin Morikawa out in favour of someone like Keegan Bradley. I think you'd be pretty foolish to do that. The guy's brilliant. I don't know what else I need to say. And also, he was a 10-foot, to my pain, he was a 12-foot putt away from winning the Rocket Mortgage Classic. He was a 6-shot lead in Hawaii. I know he blew it, but you know, he's played plenty of good golf this year. And I think when we get to this US team, the surprises will be the guys who've qualified in a curious way that we didn't expect Clark and Harmon to qualify. It looks like they will. But beyond them, I think the effect that that has, it'd be a bit like in Europe. If you get a situation where Nicolai and Bob McIntyre and Sepp Straka all qualify, then all of a sudden the rest of the team isn't going to surprise you because you're going to pick Rose, you're going to pick Hatton. And I think the same will happen in the States. I think you'll find that this is a team which looks kind of how you would have thought it would look, except Harmon and Clark.
Well, there you have it. Colin Morikawa put forward by Ben Curley. He is 1-4 or 4-1 on, depending how you look at those odds. That's just a bit shorter than Justin Thomas, who Niall has left out. And Keegan Bradley is next at 6-4 on. And then Cam Young, 11-8 on, with Finau, as already picked by Niall, at 10-11. So that concludes the Ryder Cup chat on the teams and also the wildcards. It also is the end of the podcast, sadly. So now it's time to recap all of the picks from both the Ryder Cup and the 3M Open. Let's begin with the 3M Open and Ben Coley's picks. He has Sungjae Im, Justin Suh, Grayson Sig as his main three picks, and then Austin Eckroat and Garrick Higo as the longer shot mentions in his previews and the podcast. And then on the Ryder Cup side of things, he threw in Nicolai Højgaard and Colin Morikawa as his picks for Team Europe and Team USA wildcards, respectively. And then Niall Lyons has gone with Cam Davis, Taylor Pendrith and Adam Svensson in the 3M Open, with Ben Griffin as his fourth and final name for that event. And his big price fancy at triple figures, with Seamus Power, his Irish friend, picking up a spot in the Team Europe wildcard selections, and Tony Finau rounding it off for Team USA. Yes, a massive thank you, Ben Coley and Niall Lyons. Starting with you, Ben, can you let the kind people know where to find you on Twitter so they can send in questions next time?
Yeah, it's at Ben Coley Golf, and I'd like to take this opportunity to apologise to anybody who has notifications turned on for my tweets for Sunday night. I was tweeting furiously from the hours of 10 till 1 in the morning, and that's not what anybody needs. So, I'll try not to do that again. It's been a tricky few weeks. But yes, come along, follow me. Just don't set up notifications. I mean, come on, that's a ludicrous thing to do. It's too much pressure.
I've never heard anyone plug their own Twitter, but then apologise straight away. So new people might be joining. And Niall, what about yourself? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at BetGolfWorld. On Sunday evening, I was fast asleep. I was not watching the Barracuda.
Well, this is why I envy Niall's life. He sleeps on Sunday nights.
There you go. It's your punishment for having picks in contention, I guess. But yeah, that was a very in-depth preview of both, the Ryder Cup wildcard selections and the 3M Open. Thanks for joining. And remember to tune in next time on The Tips, where we will be previewing the Wyndham Championship from Sedgefield, where Tom Kim looks to defend. Bye for now.